Yeah, that's a really powerful question.
That's a beautiful question.
That's a very wise question, Lauren.
Hello, and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the American West and beyond. The Right Question is supported by members of Montana Public Radio and by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. I'm Lauren Korn, speaking with novelist Sally Blakely, author of Friends to Lovers, the second romance I've featured on The Right Question, the first given a full episode. Friends to Lovers is Sally's debut, a beautifully written and lively story about best friends Joni and Ren. They've known each other since childhood. When readers first encounter Joni and Ren, they've been living apart after decades living in the same city, and they concoct a plan to keep in touch. They'll be each other's plus ones at a number of upcoming weddings. But when a line is crossed and the friendship is ruined, Joni begins to realize Ren's absence is much larger than even she realized. Friends to Lovers is not only a novel about romantic love, but also platonic love of friendships and familial love, too. Sally, thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to The Right Question.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here. I want to start with a bit of a zoom out. Yours just may be the second romance novel I've featured on The Right Question under my hosting. And I want to situate our listeners a bit in this genre. What was your relationship to romance, whether it be romance books or romantic comedies, movies, before you began writing this book, Friends to Lovers?
I love this question, and I would say that probably my love of romance started with movies. I'm a big movie and TV person, so definitely, you know, growing up watching all the classics, Nora Ephron, things like that, Nancy Myers, you know, loving all of those, and I have two older sisters who definitely helped introduce me to the genre, and I didn't really start reading romance until maybe the end of high school. But my favorite component of anything I read was always the romantic storyline, which is kind of how I came to it as a writer. I actually wasn't originally writing romance. I was writing science fiction and fantasy. That was what I tried to focus on a little bit more. But what I quickly discovered was that I always included a romantic. In my mind, I thought it was a subplot, but when I went back and read it, I was like, oh, this is a romance with some sci-fi elements or something. So that's definitely what helped me discover, you know, romance is what I want to be writing and focusing on. So that's probably my logistical answer. My larger answer is just that I've always loved a love story and not even really in the classical sense or the traditional sense, but, you know, we see, you know, we love our friends, we love our family, we fall in romantic love, whatever it is. And I think it's just such an overarching theme that we see in, again, so many genres. And that was just what really drew me into it and made me want to explore that further.
Are there a lot of overlaps between romance and sci-fi fantasy or sci-fi science fiction writing for you, like in your experience of it?
I think probably a big thing is that it just adds this whole, just a whole new set of stakes to the story, right? That if there is someone that, you know, either they're falling in love or someone they have to return to, there's suddenly this whole other relationship that makes it more important that this person succeed or return home, or makes it all the more heartbreaking if that doesn't happen. So one of my favorite books, one of my favorite series growing up was, I think it's called The Enchanted Forest Chronicles. It's like dealing with dragons and searching for dragons.
Yeah.
And I remember getting to Searching for Dragons and Cimmerine meets, I'm going to forget his name now, but whoever she falls in love with. And I love that we had this basis in dealing with dragons where we see her on her own and, you know, striking out on her own. But then in the second one, she finds this person to be a partner with, and she continues her life, you know, in this world. And so I think that for me was probably a big realization when I was writing fantasy, was just, what is this person fighting for? And obviously there are a lot of, there's the much larger theme in fantasy and sci-fi. But part of it is just this very personal relationship, right? This desire to love and be loved, to return to the person you love. And that, I think that's something that really draws me into a story, is kind of this relationship between fighting for the larger cause versus fighting for the individual, right? Like one person as kind of the example of that. And I think that a love story does a great job of illustrating that.
I want you to introduce your book's main characters. But before that, because we're sort of talking in this, I don't know, a little more generally about this idea of love and finding love, but also, and you mentioned this, like there is familial love, there's love of friends, and your book situates friendship as so foundational, which I agree with on many different levels. What do you think we, maybe as a culture, as readers, as just consumers, what do we overlook when we treat friendship as kind of a stepping stone to something more instead of actually just focusing so deeply on nurturing friendships? And what made you want to keep that boundary so porous in this book, particularly towards the end of the book, when your readers might begin questioning whether Ren and Joni, these are the two main characters, whether their relationship will actually bear out?
Man, that's a great question. I've never really been in a relationship that actually started as just friends. So actually this relationship that I wrote about, it wasn't really, you know, based in experience for me. I will say that my husband is my best friend in the world, and that was always an important basis in any relationship for me. But I think that kind of grew, once we had gotten together. So I had never really looked to my friendships as a possible, you know, romantic situation. But I do think it happens so naturally because, I mean, in my opinion, right, your partner should be your best friend. It should be rooted in this friendship. And I think that grows from all sorts of places. So I might be answering the second part of your question first a little bit. But in terms of making it pretty porous in this book, especially at the end, I think it just was that these are two people who have relied on each other so much throughout their lives, who know each other better than anyone, who make each other laugh. I think that's a huge thing. Not that you can't find that, you know, you can find that in all sorts of relationships, but I think that's important to any kind of relationship. And just seeing if that can bear fruit in that way, right? If it can be a romantic partnership. Because if it can be, then wonderful, right? Like if you fall in love with somebody that you already have that foundation with, how amazing would that be? And I think, at least in my own writing, something I do struggle with sometimes is this idea of starting from zero. It's so much easier to write a couple when they already have this connection, especially when you have so little space to explore it. You don't want to take up too much time establishing that foundation. I think that, you know, we run pretty quickly into this idea of kind of insta-love or what have you. And that's something that as a reader, I don't love. So I love to read a book where there's already this established dynamic between the two. So I think for me, Friends to Lovers, that was just kind of the natural way to go. Just because there's already this relationship. I think Rin and Joni definitely are two people who it's pretty obvious to everyone but them. I guess I would say everyone but Joni. It's obvious to Rin, I think. I think Rin knows that they should be together. But I think for Joni in particular, it was just interesting to explore somebody who she loves him, right? But what happens if that doesn't work? And then what happens if you lose this most important person to you. And I think we've probably all been through that experience of losing really close friends. And so kind of risking it all for that, you know, deciding if it's worth it or not, was just a huge part of her character development throughout.
With a relationship or a friendship like Ren and Joanie's, what is the risk of bringing them into a romance? I know this is a romance and there are different, you know, there has to be certain equations and tropes of a genre, right? But are we risking something by putting these two people in a romantic situation when their friendship is so rich?
I think if it's okay, I might go a little bit broader with this answer and obviously bring it back to the book. But I've been having a conversation kind of similar to this with some of my friends lately, just about the importance of friendships. And I've been thinking a lot about that in my own life and feel very lucky to be surrounded by incredible friends. But I do think, and this isn't really going to sound connected, but I promise it is. I think that we honestly have set, not we as a collective, but a lot of people culturally, have set the standard pretty low for romantic relationships. And I think we see a lot of people entering into partnerships for all sorts of reasons that I fully respect and understand. But I think the kind of common, like something I see on social media so often is, you know, a relationship or a marriage is like, it's the hardest thing you'll ever do. It's so much hard work every single day, but it's a choice. And, you know, this kind of rhetoric that's just like a relationship is going to be work no matter what. And I don't mean to deny that any relationship you put effort into, but I think this word work is almost a little bit where I take issue with it, because of course you want to put effort into, you know, any kind of relationship. You want to keep in touch with someone. You want to make sure you're keeping track of each other's lives, that you're in communication, whatever it is, that you're giving them your time, you're spending time together. But I don't know that it should feel like such a challenge. And that just, I think, ties into this conversation a little bit where at least part of my hope in writing romance would be that it's not just this kind of dream, but that it's this relationship that's feasible and possible and should probably actually be the kind of relationship that you want to be in, right? Where it's easy and this is your best friend and this is this person that you want to spend maybe the rest of your life with, right? But if not that, a huge portion of it with, a lot of your time with. And so in that way, I think friends to lovers just seemed so natural because of course you want to hang out with your best friend, right? But I think in the meantime, if you haven't found that person or if you don't want to find that person or whatever it is, friendship that doesn't turn romantic is so important. And I think the more common experience, right? I don't know that, well, I think the trope of friends to lovers is something that people absolutely experience. If I think about friends of mine who are in relationships, I don't think a lot of them actually started out that way. I think it kind of grew from there. I don't know. When I think about all of my closest friends, they're some of the most important relationships in the world to me. And I think I thanked a lot of them in my acknowledgments, like when I was writing about friendship and just the friendship aspects. I definitely thought about things I'd done with my own friends. And obviously that's a little bit different because there's a lot of unspoken, you know, things going on between Rin and Joanie. But like the different trips I've taken with friends, the different things I've done just to nurture these friendships and make sure they continue. Because I think one great thing that's happening in romance is that the romantic relationship isn't necessarily the only focus. We're also focusing more on friendship, on family, on all of the people that make up a life. And that also support then this central couple together and individually.
You're listening to A Conversation with Sally Blakely. I'm Lauren Korn. This episode of The Right Question is supported by Montana Book Company, located in downtown Helena, Montana since 1978, offering new books for all ages, vinyl records, and community activism. Delivery in Helena and shipping is available online at mtbookco.com. We've sort of been talking about Ren and Joni a little bit broadly, but Sally, introduce our listeners to these two protagonists. We know that they're best friends, but talk about these two characters, who they are at the beginning of the novel, and maybe how you went about their evolution, both as individuals and as a couple. So yeah, introduce our listeners to these two protagonists.
So Ren and Joni, they've been best friends their whole lives, which is just kind of understood at the beginning. We don't see them, you know, when they're children. I will say in a much earlier draft, we had a lot of flashbacks to Ren and Joni as kids and them growing up, which was enormously helpful for me as a writer, just to know who they are, how they got here, what they looked like when they were 14, 15, 18, you know? But when we meet them, they are in their early 20s. They've recently graduated college, and they're both very creative people. Joni probably a little bit more so, but they both work in creative fields, which honestly, for me, is both what I know how to write, because it's what I do and have wanted to do. But is also both of their jobs are a little bit of wish fulfillment for me, which is one of my favorite parts of writing, is getting to research all of that and spend all of this time in this other world. Ren works for a fictional record company in Portland, and Ren is a little complicated. I think he keeps his emotions pretty close. I don't know if I would go so far as to say he's totally emotionally unavailable. I wouldn't want to write a hero who is fully emotionally unavailable, but I think in terms of his arc, it takes him a really, really long time to open up to Joni about, you know, how he's been feeling, whatever that may be. And I think that's a pretty big part of his arc. Ren, I think, knows what he wants, both in his personal life and in his professional life, and works pretty diligently toward those things. He's a pretty steady person. And I think for him, by the end of the book, what he definitely has to learn how to do is to kind of take those maybe bigger risks that might lay a little bit outside of his comfort zone, because I think he doesn't really want to. I think he knows what he wants, but he doesn't want to disrupt the flow of things. And at least for him, that definitely comes from his two pretty overachieving older siblings. He's the youngest. I'm the youngest. So that was fun to kind of write, you know, have that a little bit. I think that Ren is somebody who kind of doesn't want to rock the boat. He sees his parents being really, really proud of his siblings who are maybe in more traditional fields. And he both goes for what he wants, but I think he also views it as a point of pride to not be a burden to anybody, to be steady. And so I think that that's kind of, I think that plays into his relationship with Joni quite a bit too, and just figuring out that balance, right? Like, what does he want? How does he get it? Also, how does he express what he wants without that feeling like this huge risk for him to take? So I think Joni is quite a bit of a foil to Ren. She is a little bit more chaotic. And I love Joni so much. Her brain, I just kind of wanted to protect it throughout the book. And I will say, also in earlier drafts, there was quite a bit more about Joni's own maybe self-doubt, even self-hatred, a lot of really negative self-talk that didn't necessarily make it into this final version of the book, but I think influenced a lot of her anxiety and how she moves throughout the world. She has a therapist mother who is a great therapist professionally and maybe tries pretty hard with her two daughters, but doesn't necessarily, you know, do as well as she should. And I think that that really, really informed Joni's character. She started struggling with anxiety in high school and, of course, just had a mom who wanted to fix it. And so in that way, I think they're similar. I think that Rin and Joni both kind of keep things either to themselves or share them with each other, which I think is a big basis, you know, of their friendship. It's a big part of their foundation. But by the end of it, Joni has to, I think, learn how to navigate that without Rin. And it was important to me that the message was not necessarily that she had to do it without support, because I don't think that's true. We all need, you know, we all need support and need friends and healthy relationships to help us through these things. But I think she had spent so much of her life having this one person who kind of brought her back down to reality, who saw her no matter what. And because of that, she had maybe not really flexed that muscle on her own. And so I think the time that she and Rin spend apart in the book is important for that reason. And so I think her big arc throughout the present day is kind of looking at her life and shambles around her and figuring out what are the pieces I want to keep here. And Rin, of course, is one of those.
Let's pivot. I want to talk about music in this book. There is a point at which Rin and Joni are apart, and Joni thinks of Rin at one point. I couldn't listen to music without thinking about him, and so my world became quieter for a while. I loved that line. He sends Joni these really thoughtful playlists, and you even include a playlist at the end of the book. But this particular phrase that I just read, my world became quieter, it seems, and I guess when I preface this question by saying I want to talk about music, I want to talk about the opposite, because Rin and Joni have such a quiet devotion to one another. So talk about how you view silence and quiet, whether in this devotion, or you can talk about it certainly in craft terms or not, but talk about silence and quiet operating or not operating enough in this book, in the genre, in real life love stories, all of it.
I loved writing that line. I will say that is one of the lines, one of the few lines I think from the book that I kind of remember. So much of this book has kind of flooded my brain. But I thought that that was so important for Joni, because Rin has really soundtracked her life with all of these playlists he makes for her. But her world also just gets quieter because she doesn't have her best friend to talk to all the time, right? It's not just about the music, I think, in that moment. It's about her world literally gets quieter because there isn't this constant presence. And particularly because her thoughts are so loud, I think Rin was able to silence those for her for pretty much their entire lives, right? He was the one who really kind of helped her calm down, and suddenly she doesn't have that. So her world might have literally gotten a little bit quieter, but her brain is probably louder than ever. And I think that that, particularly in that moment, was just a pretty important distinction.
Will you read a passage from Friends to Lovers? And Sally, feel free to read whatever passage you want.
Okay, so to set the scene, Joni and Rin have reunited for the first time in a couple years at their family's beach house. Their two families, you know, their families share a beach house for Joni's little sister Stevie's wedding to Leo. And one thing that Leo really wants to do while they're all there is play capture the flag. And so this was supposed to be kind of a callback to, you know, their youth or what have you. The rules are simple, Leo says. We've all convened around the fire pit my dad had installed on the back patio a few years ago. It's unlit, and Leo stands on the concrete edge, hands on his hips. The sun has finally dipped below the horizon, the last stretches of light across the sky making it seem like we're about to embark on some Goonies-style adventure where anything is possible. I think we've all played capture the flag before, Sasha says. Can we just choose teams? I want to hear the rules, I call. Deep down, despite everyone treating me normally, I can still feel myself searching for that opportunity to be part of things like before, to establish myself in this group. Leo grins and proceeds to explain rules that, yes, we all probably know, but his energy is infectious, and even Sasha is smiling by the time he's done. First team to get the other team's flag and make it back to their base camp wins. If you get tagged by someone on the opposite team, you're sent to jail and have to be tagged out by your own team member. Blue team's camp in jail is here, Leo says, waving a hand at the patio. Red team's is the old swing set at the top of the yard. Blue's flag is on a tree at the bottom edge of the side yard. Red's is at the top. Stevie holds out her bag filled with red and blue bandanas. You can use the forest for cover, she says, as we all reach in to grab one, Leo hopping down from his post to make sure no one tries to choose a specific color. But no one goes further than where the path turns toward the lighthouse. We don't want anyone tumbling into the ocean. One more thing, Leo says. Losing team covers the tab at Clyde's tomorrow night. Clyde's is Stevie's favorite bar in town and our last stop on their joint bachelor/bachelorette party. We split into groups, Red heading toward one side of the fire pit and Blue staying on this one. I bounce on my toes, the sound of the ocean crashing invisibly below racing into my veins. I've never been one for organized competition. Hate when people offer me tips for sports I'm already well aware I'm bad at. But something about the fading light, the anticipation emanating off of the others, being back in this place, has me excited. Ren wanders over with the concentration he used to display before his soccer games in high school. Hey, teammate, I say, holding up my blue bandana as he knots one around his neck. No way, Sasha says, tying her red bandana around her arm like she's headed into battle. I stop bouncing as she waves a finger between Ren and me. These two can't be on a team together. Why not? Leo asks. You weren't around for the great charades debacle of 2014, Stevie explains. I was not mouthing the answers to Joni, Ren argues. He's always been offended by the suggestion we cheated. What about the poker fiasco the summer after they graduated high school? Thad adds, you hid cards for each other. Or, we get it, I say, knowing this could go on all night. We didn't cheat, but they'll never listen. Who's trading? I'll be on red, Ren says, reaching up to undo his bandana. Hold on, Thad says. How do we know that this isn't already the plan? Ren narrows his eyes at his brother. What plan? He asks. I want Joni, Stevie interjects. I throw her a confused look. No one ever picks me for games like this. She rolls her eyes. Unless you'd like to keep discussing this. I raise my hands in surrender. Who am I being traded for? The band's bassist takes my bandana and I head off with the red team, but not before I glance back to see Thad with one hand on Ren's shoulder, strategizing with him in a low voice. It sends a small twinge of disappointment through me. I wouldn't have hated to be on the same team as Ren. I shake the thought away. We have a game to win.
Thank you. Yeah, I loved the capture the flag scenes or scene.
Good. Just, oh, I'm so happy.
Yeah. Sally, thank you so much for being in conversation with me today. Thank you so much. This was such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Sally Blakely, author of Friends to Lovers, published by Canary Street Press, an imprint of HarperCollins Harlequin Trade Publishing. To listen to this conversation again, to share it with friends, or to learn more about Sally, head to mtpr.org. You've been listening to The Right Question. This episode was produced by Chris Moyles and me. I'm your host, Lauren Korn. Chris also engineered this episode. The artwork for The Right Question was designed by Molly Russell. Funding for The Right Question is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting this program since 2008. And thank you for listening. The Right Question is a production of Montana Public Radio.